greet you in Jesus' name. It's good to see all of you here this morning. As we looked into Joshua, and as we've been looking into the Deuteronomy, we see that the people of God, they face challenges in their Christian life. They face challenges, and Joshua, as he led the people into Canaan, they had challenges to face. We face challenges too. It's the same. We don't want to be negligent in doing our part, just like Joshua was not negligent in doing his part. I think the last time I preached here, I preached on non-resistance, and that was because I'd heard a message on non-resistance, and I was out of town one time, but when he preached that message on non-resistance, they preached a message on non-resistance and then preached a message on unconformity. It was their pattern. It just changed one year after another, and I got the non-resistance message. I'm not going to wait a year till I preach on nonconformity, okay? You're getting it this morning. All right, so it'll be a little closer together. And I don't know if I've ever preached on nonconformity, which is, I suppose, embarrassing. But and I don't even title my message nonconformity. I guess that's why I don't preach on nonconformity. But I'm not going to title my message nonconformity. I'm going to title it Separation from the World, or simply Separation. So we want to think about separation from the world this morning. We thought about it a lot this morning already. I was amazed how much we thought about it as we went through this service this morning. But in Genesis 1, verses 3 and 4, it says, "And God said, let there be light, and there was light. And God saw the light that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness." Now, what did God do to the light and the darkness? He separated it. That's right. He separated it. Oh, God is a God who makes separation. He is. He separated the light from the darkness. And the second day, he separated the waters from the waters and created the sky. Yeah, God creates order out of chaos by separation. And the third day, God separated the waters from the land and created the sea and the dry land. He separated it again. And the fourth day, God gave the sun and the moon to separate the day and the night. And he's separating. He's taking this mass of chaos that was there in Genesis 1, verse 1 there. And the earth was without form and void. And he's separating it and giving order and giving direction for us. And we need those kind of separations that God can do to order and direct our lives as well. The separation that occurred when Adam and Eve ate of the tree is the next separation we're going to talk about. God separated himself from man. Oh, yes, there was a separation there. God separated himself from us. Why? He separated himself from sin. And thank God he did. Thank God he was not corrupted by the deadly influence of sin. Thank God he didn't have to experience the pain and the sorrow and the sickness and the death that sin brings. God, of course, couldn't. Isn't going to, whatever. He's not going to be polluted by sin. And so he separated himself from us who was sinful. Yes, God separated himself from man. Thank God the purity and perfection and beauty of heaven was preserved. But, yes, the beauty and perfection of heaven was preserved, but we were separated from that. Separation. Separation is a part of your thought processes. It's a part of something you need to be thinking about. Because the separation from God is a crisis in our lives. It is a real crisis in our lives. This separation. Yes. We were separated from good. We were separated from life. We were separated from God. We were mortal. And if we didn't get our relationship with God corrected, we would die. We were going to be separated from God by the second death. There is a second separation coming. This first separation is bad enough. Okay? Hardly describes it accurately, but let's say this first separation is bad enough, and if we don't get busy and do something about it, we are going to experience the second separation from God that is irreversible and can't be changed. And so you better be alert and diligent about your life, because that's who you are. You're an individual who came into this world and you have a problem of separation from God. And while you have breath, you need to be restored to God. Now, thank God, he is in favor of that happening. And it can happen. And for many of us, most of us, maybe, let's say all of us, we have experienced that. That is wonderful. But this separation thing is something that needs to be on our mind. There is a second separation coming in Matthew 25, verse 31. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another as a shepherd divideth the sheep from the goats, and he shall set the sheep on his right hand and the goats on his left hand. Jesus here talks about separation. And there's going to be a separation of the sheep from the goats. And Jesus will do that separating. Jesus will do that dividing, the separation of the sheep from the goats. And that's what needs to be on our mind, that separation. It is a vast, consequential, and eternal separation, and the devil doesn't want you to be thinking about it. He wants our minds filled with music and media and work and immorality and sports and movies and drugs and politics, anything to keep our minds away from the serious contemplation about eternity. And the devil is actively working on your heart and in your life to keep you distracted from thinking about that separation that Jesus is going to enforce someday when you stand before God. Yeah, the devil is trying to keep your mind off of that. The devil wants the voice of the Spirit quieted, silenced, and seared. Are you silencing that still small voice? Don't silence that still small voice. Oh, it might be irksome. It might be driving you to do something you don't want to do, like confessing your sin or dealing with a problem that you have. But listen to the voice of God and let him speak to you and guide you so that you aren't separated from God. Our separation from God was on Jesus' mind. It drove him to come here. That's why he came here in the first place, because we were separated from God. And it was on his heart, that separation, that we would experience. In Mark 9, verse 43 through 48, I'm going to read these verses. And it says, if thy hand offend thee, cut it off. It is better for thee to enter into life maimed than having two hands to go into hell, into the fire which never shall be quenched, where the worm dieth not and the fire is not quenched. He said, here Jesus, he's talking to us. And he says, if your hand is causing you to sin, it's better to cut it off than to be separated from God. But he continues on and he says, if thy foot causes you to offend, cut it off. Because it's better for thee to enter into life, halt into life, than having 2 feet to be cast into hell, into the fire that never shall be quenched, where the worm dies not and the fire is not quenched. He said, this separation is serious business, and I want you to think about it. And he doesn't stop there. And he says, if your eye is causing you to offend, causing you to sin, you better just pluck it out, throw it away. Because it is better for thee to enter into the kingdom of God with one eye than having 2 eyes to be cast into hellfire. And he doesn't stop there. He says, where their worm dieth not and the fire is not quenched. He said, you don't want to go to that place where the worm dieth not and the fire is not quenched. That is called separation from God. And that is real. And Jesus understood that. Jesus saw the lake of fire. He knew what it was. And he didn't want you to go there. That place was prepared for what? For the devil and his angels. And we will be cast there as well if we don't run to Jesus and identify with Jesus and separate ourselves from the world. If there is going to be a separation in eternity from the smoke and stench of hell, there will need to be a separation from the devil unto God in this life. And our business is to convince God that we're not interested in the world and we're not interested in sin, but we're interested in God and what He has. And I hope as God uses your life, He says, yes, that particular brother, that particular sister is definitely not interested in the world. He's definitely not interested in sin. He's definitely interested in following after me. I can tell by how he lives. I can tell by how he talks. You better hope you're convincing God about it, because he's watching to see where your affections are. Paul says there in Romans 12, verse 1 and 2, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And there, Paul paints that picture of we need to be that we present our bodies holy and acceptable unto God, and we don't present our bodies holy and acceptable unto the world. That's the contrast right there. And be not conformed to this world. Don't present your bodies to the world, but be transformed, changed. He says, I beseech you by the mercies of God. He just wrote the first 11 chapters of Romans, right? And he was talking about the mercies of God. And he was talking, what did he talk about? He's beseeching us by, on the basis of these, of what he had just talked about in those 11 chapters, that we present our bodies to God. And he talked about that we have a problem of sin. He talked about mankind, and he talked about how ugly we are, how evil we are. And he talked about how that we all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. And he talked about how that through Jesus Christ, we can have justification and we can become righteous before God. He talked about the gospel of Jesus Christ, and that's the mercies of God. That we have an access to heaven through Jesus Christ. And therefore, thank God we have that access. And therefore, thank God we have this escape from our condemnation. And therefore, because of the mercies of God, we should present our bodies a living sacrifice to... But to who? You know, our flesh wants us to enjoy the things of the world. But... But God says, I want you to present your bodies a living sacrifice to me. And that's that conflict that you experience in your heart. That's that conflict you experience in your life as you go through this world. This attraction to I want to do that. And then the Spirit of God reminding you, no, that's not godly. And then what do you do? We need God. I need to be reminded about it all the time. Thank God we have Thanksgiving. At least one day of the year I can think about being thankful to God for what he does for me. And I know you do more than one day a year. Being thankful to God is so important. We receive the mercies of God every morning. They're new every morning. It's full and abundant every morning. If we can only see that, you know, we have our breath, we have our thought, we have the ability of happiness, we have health, we have security, we have forgiveness, we have adoption, we have immortality, we have a good future, we have, what the Bible talks about, we have every good thing, salvation, all of us have sinned and come short of the glory of God, and we have righteousness through Jesus Christ. We have so many things that we are dependent upon God for. So, yeah, by the mercies of God, we should present our bodies a living sacrifice to him and not present our bodies to the world or be conformed to the world. What is worldly? How do you define what is worldly? Well, I'm sure I'll be talking about some of those things, but we will let the Christian Brotherhood define what worldly is. Here Paul says, don't be conformed to this world. Conformed is, the strong definition is to be fashioned alike, or that is, conform to the same pattern. Don't be patterned like the world. Don't be conformed to the pattern of the world. The Greek word is used only two times in the New Testament. It's one, of course, one is right here, and the other one is found in 1 Peter 1, verse 14, where Peter says, as obedient children, not fashioning yourselves according to the former lust in your ignorance. And here is translated fashioning. Not fashioning yourselves according to the former lust in your ignorance. And here Peter is directly appealing to us that we don't fashion ourselves like the world. Fashioning ourselves like how we ignorantly did before we became a follower of God. That's how Peter addresses it. But as he which has called you is holy, so be you holy in all manner of conversation. To the brethren, Paul and Peter would say, don't follow worldly fashions in your haircuts. You didn't know haircuts was in there, did you? It is. He talks directly about it. He talks directly about it there in Romans 12, 1 and 2. And he talks directly about it there in 1 Peter 1, verse 14 and 15. He's talking about your haircuts. Yeah, that's what he's talking about. And more than that, of course. But don't be conformed to the world in your haircuts. That's very simple. The Bible does reference our haircuts and a whole lot more. Don't be drawn to fashion statement shirts. Don't follow worldly fashions in your trucks. Of course not. You know the noisy, the being raised up, the tires, the extended out, the chrome pipes, the cool lights, and all that. The worldly stuff. Just don't be conformed to the world. Why? Why shouldn't I be conformed to the world? Because you want to convince God that you don't have your affection to the world, that you have your affection to him. It's like, really? Do I? Well, think about it. Don't let the world attract your attention and affection, because the world is intentionally set up to lure your affection away from God. And if your affection is lured away from God, that's the end of you. That's bad. That's horrid. You know what James said in James 4, verse 4 and 5? He said, ye adulterers and adulteresses,
What is he talking about? People that were committing adultery? Not actually committing adultery, but what he was talking about was people who were supposed to have their affection to God, and they had their affection to the world. And he called it adultery, because that's what it is.
If we have affection to the world,
don't you know that the Spirit of God that dwelleth in you lusteth enviously? The Spirit of God that is in you, if you're a Christian, the Spirit of God is in you, and that Spirit of God he wants your affection. He wants your love. He wants you to love God. God wants you to love Him, and God is jealous when you don't give Him your love. He made you because He wants your love. That's why He made you. He wants your love. And if you don't give Him that love, He is jealous. And I'm going to tell you something else about God. If you don't give Him His love, He gets angry. You just read through Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers. And what did God do when the children of Israel put their affection toward anything but God? When they put their affection and they didn't trust in God, He became angry. He said, Moses, just destroy them. I'll just step aside. I'll destroy them. And I'll make you out of you a great nation. Because they don't love me. They're not showing affection for me. They don't care about me. And that's how He feels about you as well. When you give your affection to the world, it makes Him angry. And He calls them, you adulterer and adulteresses. Ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the... Is being a friend of the world really being an enemy of God? Of course. Say, of course, but that's what it says. If you're a friend of the world, did he say enemy? Is that what he said? Let me read that. Know ye not that friendship of the world is enmity with God? Enmity with God? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God? Ooh. I didn't know worldliness was that bad. A little bit of worldliness shouldn't be bad. Huh? Anyway, that's what James thought. Do you think that the Scripture saith in vain, the Spirit that dwelleth in us lusteth to envy? Do you need to be a person who gives the impression to others that you are trying to think about God and honoring God all the time? Do you need to be that kind of a person? No, you don't need to be that kind of a person. Of course not. You may be ashamed. You may be ashamed of being too attached to God. You may be ashamed of being identified with God. If you want to, millions of people are. Yes, there's millions of people who are ashamed to be attached to being like God. And you can be just like them. Am I going to be ashamed of being associated with God? Please, please don't let me ever be ashamed of you, Lord. Do I need to be a person who gives the impression to others that we are trying to think about God and honoring God all the time? Do I need to be that kind of a person? Yeah, you don't have to be, but you should be. You should be the kind of person that when somebody sees you, like, that person is trying to please God. That person is trying. I can tell by how he's dressed. I can tell by his actions. He's a God person. But if you're going to go to heaven, you're going to have to be that kind of a person. That is openly identifying with God and the way God lives and thinks. If you're going to get to heaven, you have to be that kind of person. Am I ashamed when I don't recognize the names of sports heroes or famous actresses? I hope not. Hope you're not ashamed. And when I'm not aware of popular movies and movie stars, are you ashamed when you don't... I have no idea who that is. Are you ashamed of that? I hope not. I hope not. And I hope you don't know the names of all the movie stars and all the sports heroes. I hope you don't even know them. We don't need to be following after those kind of things. We don't need to have those things filling our minds. We don't need to have the world filling our minds. Paul says, present your bodies to God and don't be fashioned like the world. Don't do the tattoos. Don't do the jewelry. And of course,
Don't do the immodesty. Be modest. Be covered. Don't try to see how uncovered you can still. You can be and still be somehow godly. No, what you're supposed to be doing with God. You're impressing God, but not in the right way. If you're a friend of the world, God might not like you. Actually, yeah, he won't like you. He'll be your enemy, right? We already figured that out. If it isn't God-centered, it's worldly. If it isn't God-centered, it's corrupted. It's unsatisfactory. It's unworthy of our time. To give anyone anything else, our attention or devotion, is heinously wrong if we don't give it to God. And I know that's a problem that I have, and it is a problem that you have as well, just giving your devotion all to God. And it's easy to get distracted and keep on bringing me back, God. Keep on bringing me back to you. I don't want to love the world. I like the world. I don't want you to mistake me for a worldling. Please, please don't. Please don't. I don't want that to happen. So, yes, don't dress as close to the world as you can and still not be wicked. Don't even try it. Don't let God be confused about where your affections are, because, like you said, the adulterers and adulterers, know you not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Yeah. It's not a problem just in our day. It's always been a problem. We have this problem, don't we? Moses told the children of Israel in Leviticus 18, verse 1 through 5, and I'm going to read these verses. He said, "And God spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, I am the Lord your God." What did he say? He said, "Speak unto the children of Israel, say, I am the Lord your God." What did he say? But he wanted them to know that he is the Lord their God. "After the doings of the land of Egypt, wherein ye dwelt, shall ye not do. And after the doings of the land in Canaan, whither I bring you, shall ye not do. Neither shall ye walk after their ordinances. Ye shall do my judgments and keep my ordinances to walk therein. I am the Lord your God." The gods of the Canaanites aren't your God. The gods of Egypt aren't your gods. "I am the Lord your God, and so walk after my ordinances, walk after my commandments, walk after my judgments, please. Ye shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments, which if a man do, he shall live in them. I am the Lord your God." Don't get confused about who your God is. I am the Lord your God. We already thought about this in our Sunday school lesson. You know, but I'm not about to start worshiping one of the gods of the Egyptians or even one of the Canaanite gods. Well, that's not where your temptation is. You know, you might think that was a weird thing to do, to worship a Canaanite god or an Egyptian god, but it wasn't strange to them. That was just a part of their culture around them. That was part of the world around them. And yeah, you're not going to fall into that trap, should I say, of worshiping one of the gods of the Egyptians. But the world is all around us, just like it was around them. And we can easily start worshiping the gods around us, the world around us. And God doesn't want us to. Did God want them to be singing the songs of Egypt or the songs of Canaan? Did God want them to? No! He didn't want them to be singing the songs of Egypt or the songs of Canaan. He didn't want them to be singing them. What song did he want them to sing? Songs that were devoted to him. Yeah. That's what he wanted. God wanted them separated from all of the heathen practices. He didn't want them to be following after their music. God wanted them to embrace his ordinances, to be decidedly godly in expression and culture. The devil is a ruthless dictator who is out to imprison and destroy every element and vestige of God, including mankind. who is created by God with the intent that we would bring glory to God. That's why we were made, because God wanted us to bring glory to Him. And if you don't fill that purpose, then the purpose why you're created is gone. You need to bring glory to Him. The ruthless dictator, the devil, he hides behind the pretty flashing lights of the world to lure any follower of God away from God into the, should I say, harmless and pleasant lights of the pleasures and power and intellects of this world. The devil is hiding behind there, the lights and the glitter and the fun of the world, to lure us away from the Lord our God. That's what he's doing. That's what he wants to do. The cunning, deceptive devil knows that this harmless attraction to the world will lead you into captivity and imprisonment with him. Did I say harmless attraction to the world? Yes, it seemed like a harmless attraction. But he knows he'll lead us into imprisonment and captivity with the devil, and that you will share in the horror of the devil's doom. He knows that. And there is nothing that could please the devil more than that you would share the lake of fire with him. That's how much he likes you. That he would just love if you could burn in the lake of fire forever with him. He doesn't love you at all. He hates you because you were made by God and you were made with the intent to give honor to glory to God. He doesn't want anyone to give honor and glory to God. He would rather you burn in hell forever than do it. And that's your enemy. And that's exactly what he's trying to get you to do, burn in hell. And he has the facade of the worldly systems, the gods of Egypt and the gods of Canaan, to attract us away from what God calls my statutes and my ordinances. Is the devil a liar?
Yes.
Is the devil a deceiver?
Yes.
Does he appear as an angel of light?
Yes.
Is he an accuser of the brethren?
Yes.
Yes, he's all of those things. Don't believe the false facade the devil portrays. Yes, there is fun in worldly pleasures for a season, but the fun fades, and after a while the pain and sorrow begins. But the end, the eternal end of neglecting God, is unthinkably sad. Don't neglect God. Neglect, it needs to be more than that. Be diligent to be serving and directing your devotion to God. Not only make sure you're not neglecting Him. It doesn't seem like separation from the world would need to be taught. It seems like separation from the world would be the natural consequence of individuals who love God. And I think it is a natural consequence of individuals who love God. But the alluring attraction of the world also needs to be warned about and spoken against. Just because it should be our natural inclination, we need to be driven again and again away from the world and have our hearts centered toward God. After God delivered the children of Israel out of the oppression of Egypt, you would think He wouldn't have needed to tell them, "Don't go back to Egypt." You would think so, but what had the devil done? The devil painted a picture that somehow it would be better to go back to Egypt. Oh, to the leeks and the garlics. Oh, he didn't say to the bondage, did he? He said to that good food. Yeah, he knew what going back to Egypt meant. He meant that the devil would have them. But he said, go back to the good food in Egypt. And they said, let's get a captain to go back to Egypt. Of all things. You wouldn't think God would have to say, don't go back to Egypt. But he needed to. In like manner, it is important for us to teach the need to be separate from the world as well. Separation in our music. Does the devil have his music? Yes. When God created the world, He brought order to chaos. The music of today, if I dare call it music, is chaos, it's confusion, it's disjointed, it's despair, it reflects the heart of a troubled and unstable person. That's the, if I dare call it music, the music of the world around us. If you like the rock, do you like the rock and the rap of today? It is the chaos of the devil's music. God knows it's the devil's music. If you don't, God does. Okay? God knows what kind of music the devil has, and he doesn't want us singing the devil's music. He doesn't even want us to put godly words to the devil's music. Although that's certainly better than the bad words. But no. The music of God is of melody. It's of harmony. It's of beauty. It's of peace. Is God pleased when we delight in demonic-inspired music of this world? Of course he's not. What is one of the most... changing vein of thought. What is one of the most powerful influences to worldliness we face today? Another powerful influence we face today is our phones. Our phones aren't neutral. Right. I mean, the case and the phone without any electricity to it, and no, that might be neutral. Maybe it might be radioactive. I don't know. But anyway, let's just call the device neutral as long as it's not turned on. All right. But if it's turned on, they're not neutral. Our phones are designed to draw us into the world system. They're designed to do that. Cleverly. But they are designed to do that. There are many other things that are designed to draw us into the world. That's right. And the godly system. But our phones are perhaps the most powerful. Now, you can use your phone in a godly way. I have a phone, and I believe I can use it in a godly way. But that device is a device that the devil intends to use to draw us into the world. It is not a neutral device. It is intended to draw us into the world. And so that's why we have safeguards around it. And that's why you need to be careful with that. We need to be careful. We need to be separate in our speech. I don't understand at all why young Mennonite men need to use swear words. I don't understand it at all. I don't understand why any Christian would kind of champion being able to use some macho swear words in their language. And I don't think God does either. So, if you want to sound worldly and cool, pass it by God first to make sure he's favorably impressed. We need to be separate in our morals. Fornication, carousing, immoral conduct, our courtship. It needs to be like God asks. It's what God asks of our conduct is sharply different from what the world is. I mean, it is extremely different from the world around us. But God's standard of conduct that he wants for mankind started way back when the day God made man. He said he made them male and female. And he created that there should be a marriage. There should be a union of husband and wife. And there should be a family. And that is the direction God gave. And the devil has been trying to corrupt that beautiful institution ever since. And we are in the midst of a powerful campaign to destroy that purity and beauty. And the devil and the news media and everybody out there. Not everybody, but everybody out there is saying it's okay to be immoral. It's okay to commit fornication. It's okay to look at lewd pictures. There's nothing strange about it. There is something terribly wrong about it, even if it might not be strange in the world around us. And God hasn't changed his mind about that. So we need to be separate from the world in our morals. Marriage is honored on all and the bed undefiled, but what? Whoremongers and adulterers, God will judge. Be separate from them. We need to be separate in the expressions of the flesh. And of course, that's a broad statement. But like drinking and intoxication and tobacco and vaping and gambling and addictions and pornography. Yes, those raw expressions of our flesh must be checked. They must be checked. Yes, they are evil, they are destructive, they are harmful, they are enslaving, they are corrupting, they are damning. Yes, we need to be separate to God and to holiness. And then you have the world luring us to these more neutral kind of things, like going to the fair being entangled with the sports of this world. What's wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with it, is there? Well, if you're not loving God in it, then there's something wrong with it. Yeah, the movies, the TV, the wasteful phone time, looking at YouTube all the time. Those things can involve evil, but I'm not going to lay them. They can involve evil, but I'm not going to label them as neutral things. Do you know it is sinful to be neutral about loving God? It is. We are at war with an enemy who simply wants to distract us away from devotion to God, and that's enough. So the apostle John, he says, we know this verse. He says, love not the world. There it is. John, Paul had this concern. Peter had this concern. John, that beloved, calm, lovely disciple of Jesus, he had this same concern. He says, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. That's John's perspective of loving the world. And that's serious. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. The world passes away, and the lust thereof. And the contrast to loving the world is, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. And so, Jesus, ride with me to work. Jesus, listen to my music with me. Jesus, be with me. Be with us in our courtship. Let's keep it pure. Hands off and above board. Jesus, every time I'm on my phone, I want you to be with me and guide me. Jesus, you know my every thought. I don't want to hide anything from you. And not only do we need to put off the world, but we need to put on the things of God. You know, set aside a day of worship and rest. That's a good way to please God. We know that makes God feel good when we intentionally give God one day and seven to worship and instruct, for worship and instruction and family and rest. That makes God feel good. He talked about it all the time in the Old Testament. Who couldn't get done talking about the need to have a Sabbath, a day of a set aside to worship God and to give some time to meditate upon holy things. He likes that. Because, well, we need it, a day set aside to worship Him. And then we have the other things that we could be involved in, like Halloween and Santa Claus and Easter Bunny and Easter eggs and Memorial Day and Veterans Day and Labor Day and all those things that the world has. The worldly ordinances, not God's ordinances, but rather God has given us things. He has given us things that we can champion. We can champion communion, remembering Jesus' death. We can champion baptism. We can champion Resurrection Day. We can champion Jesus' birth. We can champion Thanksgiving Day. Yes. And so we can champion so many things that are of God. My commandments and my ordinances. And so let's do champion those things. I'm going to read one more passage about from the Apostle Paul as he's concerned about separation in 2 Corinthians 6. I guess I'll do 14 through 18. We then, as workers together with him, beseech you that also that you receive not the grace of God in vain. Be not unequally, that's verse 1. Be not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. There it is. For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? And what communion hath light with darkness? And what concord hath Christ with Belial? And what part hath he that believeth with an infidel? And what agreement hath the temple of God with idols? For ye are the temple of the living God. Ye are the temple of the living God. As God has said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore, come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing. And I will receive you, and I will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and my daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. See, that's what he wants us to do. Come out from among them and be separate. A people separate to God. A holy nation, a peculiar people that show forth the praises. That show what? That show forth the praises of him who has called us out of darkness into light. That is our calling. Not reflecting as close to the world as we can. Because there's two paths. And there are two kingdoms. Just like we talked about in Non-Resistance. There are two kingdoms. And we're going to have to choose which one we're going to be a part of. And Jesus said, enter not into enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction. So enter in at the straight gate. Paul had a friend. Paul lost a friend to the world. Paul lost a friend to the world. Demas hath forsaken me, having loved this present world. We will lose friends to the world also. But we can't control our friends. But what about you? Are you going to carelessly follow the world and get swallowed up in its vortex and die in its doom? You can't control your friends. We want to help our friends as much as we can, absolutely. But you, what are you doing about about your attachment to the world? Are you going to be lost to the world as well? Okay. I guess I'll stop with that. Separation. God separated the light from the darkness, and it was good. We need to separate the light from darkness as well, and it is good. Our separation from God there in the garden was catastrophic, but if we are diligent, that separation can be resolved. If we unite ourselves to Christ and separate ourselves from the world. So separate yourselves from the world and separate yourselves unto God. Like John said very simply, love not the world. Let's kneel for prayer.